This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanesan with Lin Mark in studio this morning. And we've got Wong Xiaoning beaming to us over the wonders of the internet. In half an hour, we've got the Breakfast Grill. Xiaoning, what's happening today?
Well, today I'll be speaking to Dr. Sanjaya Velottam, who is the CEO of Sustainable Energy Development Authority, otherwise known as SEDA, because as we know, climate change is one of the biggest threats presently faced by humanity. So the question is, how do we fight it? Because countries around the world are attempting to move towards cleaner and more sustainable energy. But the question, of course, is what is Malaysia doing on this front? And what is SEDA's role in shifting the country into a greener direction? So tune in after the 8 a.m. news bulletin to listen to this. I would say going to be a very interesting breakfast grill.
Definitely something to pay attention to, especially as we all try to move towards a more sustainable future. We've also got a poll running right now on Twitter. What's your biggest grievance about the CMCO, how the CMCO has been communicated by the government? Lin, what is it looking like now?
So 125 votes so far. 64% have said that the biggest grievance is changing SOP guidelines. 21% have said mistrust over enforcement. 10% too short notice. Another 5% have said other, but whether or not they've told us what that other is, well, that's up for debate because we've only got two comments so far on this poll. Do continue to let us know what you think. We'll be taking a look at this throughout the rest of the show.
Well, right now, though, we're taking a look at Chinese fintech giant Ant Group. They've cleared their final hurdle, regulatory hurdle for its IPO offering after the China Securities Regulatory Commission gave it the all clear to list simultaneously in Hong Kong and Shanghai. The group is planning to raise around $35 billion in their dual listing and will see its split its stock issuance equally across Shanghai and Hong Kong, issuing about just under 1.7 billion shares in each location.
So this could be the world's largest IPO, surpassing the record set by Saudi Aramco's $29.4 billion float last December. Ant Group's also released some updated financial figures for the first 9 months of 2020. According to an A-share prospectus posted on the Shanghai Exchange, there was a 74% jump in gross profits to $10.4 billion from January to September, and revenue came in at $17.73 billion, more than 42% rise year on year.
Some big numbers for a very big company there. Now, the group's next move is to hold a roadshow to market the IPO to investors and will likely price the shares next week on October 27th. Now, joining us this morning to unpack this mega IPO, Brock Silvers, longtime China investment executive. Now, Brock, can you explain to us what is so unique about the Ant business model that makes it so attractive to institutional investors?
You know, I think the market finds Ant attractive beyond the basic business model. It's controlled by Jack Ma, who's the most iconic of Chinese businessmen. It's got strong revenue growth, real profit, and deep government support. So even before we dig into the business model, it's attractive. Now, in broad strokes, fintech's very appealing right now, but especially here with the Alipay connection. And Ant is self-distributing a strong portion of the IPO, which is itself very impressive. So I think even though there's a strong sense of greed at work, everyone wants to get rich via a hot IPO, but the business model remains sort of a work in progress.
And do you think that business model can be actually replicated outside of China?
Well, you know, a company like WeChat has enjoyed very little success in the U.S. and now may be locked out. But this doesn't mean that WeChat isn't valuable. It still has a billion customer accounts. Now, even without foreign expansion, companies like WeChat and Ant can still succeed, which I think is good because Ant's model may not be readily replicable in foreign markets. You know, with a possible U.S. ban, is a strong regional player worth the price of these shares? That's really the issue for me.
I guess that exemplifies one of the risks that we're paying attention to, right? But when we talk about the competition side, how does Ant stack up against the rest of the competition? I think when we come to payments, WeChat is quite dominant in the Chinese market.
Yeah, it absolutely is. You know, Tencent WeChat is a fearsome competitor, and I suspect Ping An will be one as well, and maybe Lufax. These companies as a group are really the cream of the crop of China Inc., and especially for the fintech sector. But I don't think it's a zero-sum game here. The business opportunities and models are still in quite a bit of flux. This competition is going to be healthy, but I think a bit vicious, and we've only just begun. That's why investors here, I think, are taking comfort from the fact that they're aligning themselves with Jack Ma.
So, Brock, you mentioned a potential U.S. ban on China tech there just now. And so do you consider the Trump administration's hawkish stance on Chinese businesses as a potential risk to overseas expansion? And even just generally in the U.S., the wider apparently hawkish stance even adopted by the Democrats?
Yeah, sure. Look, I think this is a risk no matter how the election turns out. But it's not really a risk to the existing business. You know, existing revenues are something like 95% generated in China. If the U.S. moves to limit Ant, which I think may be likely, the goal is simply to prevent Ant from embedding into the U.S. financial system. But this is a risk to the future business model more so than a risk to the current one. Now, as a financial risk, does limiting overseas expansion make the current pricing unrealistic? In retrospect, it could.
So let's talk about the valuation then, Brock. Ant's forward PE ratio right now is about 40 times, and it's along the lines of MasterCard, PayPal, and Visa. Taking everything into consideration here, is this a fair valuation, or should Ant be valued more along the lines of a company like Square, which has a current forward PE of around 156 times?
Sure. Look, it depends who we ask. Ant clearly believes it has greater growth potential than a MasterCard, Visa, PayPal, and I would say it's right to some degree. But IPOs aren't intended to be so heavily weighted to future potential upside. For IPOs, I prefer to look at current PE as an indicator because I'm just thinking this isn't venture capital. Now, given regulatory risk and a business model that's still being defined, I would say Ant's valuation seems more fair than not. If Ant quadrupled the valuation and said, we're now like a Square, I think they'd have a much, much smaller order book, which is why I think we're priced the way we are.
Now, beyond payments, Ant's second biggest revenue source is lending and credit, followed by asset management and then insurance. What does Ant's giant IPO say for the future of digital finance, considering it is expected to raise more than Saudi Aramco's debut last year?
It is a massive IPO. Look, most everyone loves the sector, and Ant is a solid company. People have made a lot of money with Jack Ma, and the IPO is red hot. But as I've said, the business model seems significantly unsettled. It's kind of a mix of rapidly evolving business and some hopeful ideas. And I would say that a lot of the investor community maybe doesn't even have a great grasp of the particulars or of fintech in general, nor do they even care. What we can see is China fully on board with fintech, and they've allowed the general public to make a large bet. This guarantees that we will probably see significant near-term heat for fintech in China, and ultimately either a large pool of big winners or a large pool of confused losers.
Brock, thank you so much for your time and your thoughts this morning. That was Brock Silvers, longtime China investment executive, breaking down his view of the Ant IPO, citing the Jack Ma factor and how Jack Ma has helped make a lot of people a lot of money over the last few years. And one particular point that was important, I think, to pay attention to is the fact that 95% of China revenue, 95% of revenue comes from China. So if there are macroeconomic factors, geopolitical issues, it could inhibit their growth outside the country. Xiaoling, what were some of the things that you particularly paid attention to there?
I like the fact that he's only going to use current PE versus future PE. So he's definitely a conservative investor. But nonetheless, I don't think the market is going to be as conservative as him. It's going to be a very, very red hot IPO. We had news yesterday on Bloomberg that there's a sudden demand for Hong Kong dollars, as I think many investors are subscribing for this IPO. So I can imagine it's probably going to be the IPO to watch for 2020.
Yeah, I'm definitely keeping an eye on it. And when we take, right now we're going into a few messages. When we come back, we'll be speaking to Lawrence Todd of the think tank Ideas on what a potential CMCO extension could mean for the economy. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.